Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Kirk Harris, and we got my brother Saquon Lawrence on with you this Sunday, this glorious, beautiful Sunday afternoon.
Right. I am Saquon Lawrence, the Director of Fathers Family Healthy Communities.
And I am Dr. Kirk Harris, Senior Advisor for Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities.
And today we have on the forum Ms. Susan Taylor, Founder, National Cares Mentoring Movement, and Editor-in-Chief Emeritus of Essence Magazine. And today, Susan is here to discuss the National Cares Mentoring Movement, a call to action, which she founded in 2006 as Essence Cares. Susan, as many of you know, has an expanded and an impressive bio. We won't go into all of that this afternoon. Susan is on her way here to Chicago, in fact, on business with respect to the National Cares Mentoring Movement. And so we're just glad that she's able to spend some time with us as she negotiates the airport in New York on her way here. And after we talk to Susan, we're going to talk to Helen Mitchell, Director of Strategic Planning and Policy Development for Congressman Danny Davis. But right now, we're pleased to welcome to the forum this afternoon Ms. Susan Taylor. Susan, are you there?
I'm right here. I'm absolutely right here.
How are you?
I'm so happy that my sister is going to be following me and speaking because she's doing such great work with Congressman Davis.
That's right.
Oh, good.
She absolutely
is.
She is. So let me say, before we get started, I first saw the National Cares Mentoring video at the Black Male Summit here in Chicago where Susan spoke, and I next saw it at the Open Society Foundation Conference on What Works in New York last summer where Susan co-moderated. And again, a few weeks ago at Aerial Capital, where Susan rounded up the troops and engaged all of us in this awesome, awesome discussion and work around mentoring. And it has the makings of one of the great movements of our time. So I'm very, very excited. We're very excited to have you on the show, Susan.
Well, thank you. It's really my joy to be with you, Saquon, and Kirk also.
Well, thank you.
Our work is so synergistic. You know, what we're trying to do is really help our children and our community recover. And I think it's the most important work of our time.
Right, right. So one of that's a good point. And then one of the questions we have for you is, out of all of the things that you could do, all of the areas of focus that you could spend your energy and time and resources, why did you choose mentoring?
Well, I don't know if I chose mentoring or if it chose me. I know, you know, after 37 years at Essence, truth be told, I'm tired, you know, but I'm not weary.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that I deserve a break.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my brothers, the village is on fire. So there is no retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no break. We need to know how to rest ourselves, restore ourselves, so that we can do the healing work. Because it's our love as adults that is the healing waters that our children so need.
Right.
You know, young people who have education and hope aren't packing guns. They're not creating chaos in communities. So
that's right.
What we see very often as bad behavior, and it's everywhere.
Mm.
Everywhere where there is poverty in this land of plenty, there is violence. Violence against women and children and young males killing young males. Suicide, even, is on the rise among our young males and our girls as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we are going to get our children. That's what I say every day. And group mentoring is the way forward, ensuring that they have education, that they turn their street genius into legitimate businesses, and we're going to help them to fill their hearts with love and hope.
Mm.
It's the only way forward to peace and power and prosperity in the African American community.
Right. And that's a good segue into the next question, Susan. Because I know you're on your way here, and we're going to be at Harlan High School Monday and Tuesday. Tell our listeners what the National Cares Mentoring Movement is doing in Chicago.
Well, you know, in Chicago, we're instituting a program that's called The Rising at Harlan, and everyone knows Harlan High on the south side of Chicago. It's a pilot, and it's to demonstrate that with caring adults, and a culturally affirming program, and fine leadership like Principal Reggie Evans and the Harlan teachers provide, we adults can create and successfully introduce our children to their own genius. We can ensure that they graduate from high school prepared to succeed in college and industrial training programs and 21st century careers,
mm-hmm.
and as entrepreneurs. So as our director of national initiatives says, you know, all the time, we have to nail it before we scale it. And then we're going to replicate it throughout the nation. You know that CARES is in 60 cities throughout the nation.
Right.
And in Chicago there, we're led by Windy City CARES Chair Lakeisha Gray Sewell,
right,
who so many people know, and Toussaint Werner, and Earl Lindsay. So T.J. Crawford is our program director, and we have amazing partners like Dr. Iva Carruthers and Philip Jackson and Tom and Madeline Burrell, Dr. Wayne Watson at the Chicago State University.
Right.
So it's adults in a group mentoring format stepping into the lives of 1,000 young people, 1,000 young people, and ensuring their future, changing their consciousness, helping them to know that the adults in their community, that we love them.
Right, right. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is to share your call to action with community and to help us encourage the practitioners, academia, business community, faith community, organizers, et cetera, to get involved. And that's what you're doing. What specifically do you want us to do? What do you want people to do as they think about how they can get engaged?
Well, you know what we want is we want people to show up.
Okay.
We want people to open their hearts and say that they can devote maybe 90 minutes at most a week to secure a young life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to reiterate that what we're creating at Harlan is not just for the students at Harlan. It's for our children everywhere they are suffering. It's a pilot. And we've got to have an all-school turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
We need to attach a pilot like this that shifts consciousness to reentry programs. So when our young people are returning citizens and they come out of detention and they have, you know, felony charges, that there's a way that they can shift their consciousness with the support of our faith and business and foundation communities and the community that is of able, stable black people showing up saying that we love you, we have your back, we're going to insure you. If we don't do that, they're going to recidivate.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're asking is for people just to show up,
mm-hmm,
to show up to mentor. We need folks who are ministers, we need social workers, we need graduate students, we need retirees, educators, to deliver the content. And then we need the support of mentors, able, stable brothers and sisters who are willing to give those 90 minutes a week to secure our youngsters. And, you know, the average American watches over 17 hours of television a week. And for African Americans, take that number and triple it. We are over consumers of media.
Mm-hmm.
We need all hands on deck, no excuses. And we just, you know, this is what we're going to do. We are going to show that when caring adults step into the lives of young people with a protocol that has our history and culture and our heritage honored at its center, when we show up with respect for our young people rather than demonizing them and telling them to pull up their pants, we need to make sure they can read. Because when brothers, you know, learn how to read and read well and know their power and their genius, pull up their pants and run the world.
That's
we don't
right.
have to tell them to do that.
Right.
So that's really what the program is all about.
Right.
And we're not asking for money. We're asking for time. We're asking for people's time. Open your heart and come join us.
Well, you know, we're in. Father's Family Help, this community is all in. So.
Oh, absolutely.
And you have been since the very beginning. You know, you have just engaged with us in everything that we've done so far. Do you have the information about where we're meeting, when we're meeting at Harlan?
Yes, I have it. Yeah, TJ got it to me this morning, so I have it.
Great.
And I'll be there Tuesday morning. And as you know, our work is concerned with connecting African-American non-custodial fathers appropriately to their children, financially, socially, emotionally, so that those children will realize better outcomes and possibilities. How do you see non-custodial, African-American non-custodial fathers specifically engaged in the mentoring program at Harlan High School and in the mentoring movement in general?
You know, I'll tell you, what I love most about this program, Saquon and Kirk, is that it's healing content.
Mm-hmm.
The mentors learn and grow. It was created by healers and teachers we love and admire so much. People like Naeem Akbar and Haki and Savisha, Matabudi, Yanla Van Zandt, Michael Eric Dyson, and 50 other amazing minds from throughout the country came together in about 5 years ago to begin the process.
Mm-hmm.
So the elder in the Brain Trust, Harry Belafonte, what he said to us, and it's really sort of our guiding framework, he said that we're not going to be able to heal what's hurting our children and community until we learn how to heal what's hurting us.
Mm-hmm.
So non-custodial fathers working with us will learn ways to peace within themselves and with the mothers of their children, where often there is so much strife and so much drama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll learn to practice taking the high road, taking care of themselves, not blaming or shaming anybody for the disconnections that they may have. You know, we learn how to just put our egos behind us, stay strong in spirit. We learn how to love ourselves and one another. That's getting to the core of what has upended Black America. Love is the most powerful force in the universe. And some of us call that love God or Allah, divine intelligence, Yahweh. The central force in the universe is on our side. And we just must give it a chance. Give it a chance to help us help ourselves. So non-custodial fathers, all men, we need our beautiful Black men more than anyone. We absolutely need you. We need you to step forward, be in community with other men, elders and youngins too. It's a fact. What you give is what you get.
Yeah.
So give a young person a chance at the life that, you know, he deserves, brothers. And the Holy Spirit will advance your own life and your own greatest dreams. And caring for the least of these is what God is asking us to do. That's what I believe.
Right. So, no, are you boarding the plane yet?
No, I'm pulling into the airport.
Okay, so I definitely wanted to get a couple things out before you disconnect. So where should people who are interested in giving their time, where should they call? Where should they, who should they reach out to?
Well, you know, I'm going to give everyone a phone number that
okay.
they can call, and Windy City Cares will onboard you and give you the information you need. And that number is 773-599-3490.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's 773-599-3490. And do you have the information about the meeting at Harlan?
Yep, I got that. What I have is one assembly at 8:30 in the morning, Tuesday. I have that. And then also have, there's also a meeting of the planning team, I believe, Monday, tomorrow evening at 6. Is that right?
At Harlan.
At
you
Harlan.
Have that?
Yeah, I have that.
Yes, so that's the meeting that we're inviting everyone to. The meeting for the students, the assemblies are really for the students, and it's an all-student gathering. And because there are 1,000 students, Principal Evans has agreed to have them in two sessions. So we have Brother Jeff Johnson coming in and a whole host of people who are going to be there to inspire and inform our young ones. But I want the community to come out. And please come and meet with me and the other leaders there in Chicago. Come and meet with us tomorrow evening at Harlan. And everybody, if you don't have the address, I can give it, or maybe you have it, and you can share it. I don't know if you have the address,
we can share it.
You have it?
Yeah, we can share it with the people.
Okay, great.
Don't worry about that.
652 South Michigan.
Right. Yeah, and we'll repeat this, too, because we want people to come out,
and
also the phone number. We want people to call and get engaged. And so let me ask you another question before you go. What's been the response nationally? I mean, we're on the move here in Chicago. There's a team in place. You just mentioned Windy City Cares and TJ, and you have committed social and human capital. I saw that with my own eyes, and I know a lot of the players at the table. What kind of reaction are you getting around the country?
Well, you know, the only place that the Rising is really in place with funding is Chicago. It's where we're launching the pilot.
Okay.
Even though we began this work in South Florida, when I got a call, we're in 60 cities, as I mentioned, and when I got a call from one of our leaders down in Broward County in Florida, and she said she was just so frustrated because she's a teacher at a school called Seagull, where there are 300 girls. They're all pregnant or they're already mothers. The youngest was 12 with 3 children.
And
she was so frustrated. Nobody was arrested for that, you know? She was so frustrated. She said, what do I say to a 17-year-old who already has 2 children and who I know is going to come back from summer break just pregnant again. What do I say? Hmm. And I was incredulous. I went down to the school. I was their graduation speaker, in fact, just last June. And so we have adopted that school and the school that is not contiguous, but right next door to it, mm-hmm. where there are 1,400 young men, primarily African-Americans, some Latinos, who have been incarcerated, most of them, and they're struggling. Our children are struggling in ways that we don't know. Mm-hmm. So without any funding, South Florida Cares is in there trying to implement the Rising program. Our funding comes from the Open Society Foundation. And they gave us a choice of cities. And those cities, we wanted to go into cities where we had fine leadership, as we do in Chicago. Now, South Florida was not one of those cities. Mm-hmm. So because of the funding from the Open Societies Foundation, and Sean Delve, I need to call his name, that's why we're in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So what we're creating there is really for the nation. This is so critical. Right. And it's the way forward, and I hope that the community will come out and support and join.
Yeah, and I'm sure after hearing you and the work that TJ and others are doing, we'll get folks engaged. And so one of the things I'm always interested in mentoring, because I've seen mentoring programs up close. I've managed them for the city of Chicago in my career. And one of the things that impressed me in terms of the programs that really work is the ones where the youth are engaged in projects, right? So they're like in project-based learning, so to speak. And they have opportunity to learn, and they have an opportunity to achieve. Because we talk about this often at Father's Family of the Community, that achievement is really at the core of high self-esteem. It's not just telling people that they're beautiful. It's not just telling them that they're wonderful, right? It's what they achieve, right? It's like when we see kids who have math phobias all of a sudden start doing, well, not all of a sudden, through work, start doing calculus, right? And we've seen these kids' self-esteem go through the roof. I've seen this. And so mentoring, I think, for us should be a process by where children and youth can engage in projects that help the community, help themselves, and do it in teams and do it in groups. What's your thinking? What's your thought about that? And did we lose her?
Did we lose you, Susan?
Yeah, probably did in the airport, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yes, well, we thought that might happen, and that's what happens on live radio. But we can get her back on.
We're gonna try to get
her
back.
And that number again for everybody is 773-599-3490. That's Windy City, Chicago, and that's where you call to get involved. And we want to thank Susan again for taking the time on Sunday. As you all can tell, she was negotiating the airport in New York on her way here, and so we're just glad that she took the time.
Yeah,
to come and to join us.
And, you know, hopefully we'll have her back on. It looks like we will be having her back on shortly. I just wanted to say how she's been an inspiration to me. I've seen some of her work. I've seen how powerful she is. Susan, do we have you back?
You do, but just for a moment.
Okay, well, we were just closing out. We were just saying how much we appreciate you, and how I personally have witnessed some of your work, and how inspirational and powerful you are as a Black woman, and how much you do have impact on the world. And thank you for that contribution and its meaning to African American community and the world community, for that matter.
You know, I'm saying to you and to everybody else that we're standing because somebody held our back. And we have right. So many young people whose parents are overwhelmed by a whole host of things. And they don't have the community supporting them that we have. So it's our responsibility to give to our young ones what someone gave to us, whether it was a biological parent or someone else. This is the most important work of our lives,
right,
and it's
yeah.
the way that we're going to restore our community.
Right, yeah.
We have to heal what's hurting us and learn how to work in concert. You know, that's the thing. I just want to say this, that we African-Americans, because of the residual slavery, we don't work well together, and that's really what we're trying to cure. We're going to show our children that able, stable Black people can get together, love one another, respect one another, respect them, and put in place something that bridges them to the future they deserve.
Absolutely.
So I'm jumping out of this cab, and I'm on my way to Chicago.
Well, travel safely.
Tomorrow
safely.
Evening.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you
safely.
So much.
Well, thank
All
you
right.
for your
Take
time.
Take care now.
Okay. You're great. Thank
All
you.
Righty. All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. So, again, we want to thank Susan for her time. So for the next 5 weeks, we will present Father's Family Healthy Community social marketing campaign called the New Man Project. You just got a sample of what it is that we're trying to achieve. The New Man Project is an exploration and promotion of what works when it comes to rebuilding the black family. We want to reimagine the role and image of black men and fathers and work towards a successful campaign for black male achievement. In addition, we'll lift up examples of affirmative black fatherhood, male-female relationships, and effective parenting. Among the topics we're covering in the New Man Project is responsible fatherhood, the responsible fatherhood field and definitions of manhood, rites of passage and mentoring programs. Susan Taylor just talked about the mentoring programs. A few weeks ago, we had Dr. Karinga on, Marlana Karinga, talking about rites of passage programs. We want to talk about effective black leadership and the role of fathers, black womenists, allies of Father, Family, Health, and Community, like the organization Women in Fatherhood. We want to discuss effective approaches to addressing the health disparities between the black community and the larger society. And to that end, we want to invite Dr. Joe West and Dr. Angela Odom at UIC and Sinai to talk about health disparities in our community. We want to talk about examples of strong black families. We also want to talk about effective black organizations, both locally and nationally. And to that end, we have Joe Jones and Kenny Braswell, two brothers who have outstanding. Joe has a mega organization, right?
Absolutely.
Out there in Baltimore. So let's talk about fathers as assets. We want to talk about youth as Susan just talked about, as a group with enormous capacity and possibility. We want to lift up the black woman as heroic placemakers in our community and families. We want to reintroduce ourselves to our culture and have a dialogue about its central role in rescue and reassertion in society and the world. So we're challenging ourselves to stop talking so much about how bad things are, how bad our communities are, how bad our politicians and schools are, and instead promote solutions. We want to talk about what works, and we want to talk about examples of excellence and the best of what it means to be African-American and human in the world. So fathers, non-custodial fathers, if you want to join Fathers, Family, Healthy Communities, call us at 312-252-0460, extension 120. Again, 312-252-0460, extension 120. Or visit our website at www.ffhc.org. Again, www.ffhc.org. Or listen to the show on WVON every Sunday at 2 p.m. When we return from the break, we're going to have Helen Mitchell from Congressman Danny Davis's office, and Dr. Kirk Harris will be interviewing Helen. And any thoughts about, she didn't get a chance to answer that question before she got off the air, but I am interested in this idea of project-based mentoring, right? Where kids have an opportunity to work in teams, work collectively to achieve great things, and in that process learn, right? Yeah. Have an opportunity to make mistakes. Oftentimes we learn more from the mistakes we make, right?
Right.
In a safe environment.
Right, and project-based learning as a strategy is something that's been considered a need and an innovation mm-hmm. because what we do is we abstract things for kids and we don't connect it to their learning to some practical application. And so the way kids learn best and the way a lot of kids learn best is by connecting the theory with the practice and engaging their communities and doing the same. So in fact the Gates Foundation supports those kinds of innovations. So that's the up and coming opportunities.
Right, right. So Joe, are we going to break?
Let's repeat the time and the address for the meeting with Susan Taylor. I think we have a few people who have expressed interest who are listening. So you want to you?
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. We got some people calling in, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so 773-599-3490. That's Windy City Cares. Again, 773-559-3490, and that's the Chicago organization, Chicago-based organization, that is leading the way with regard to the National CARES Mentoring Movement. And the meeting tomorrow at 6, we're inviting folks to come out at Harlan High School. That's 9652 South Michigan. Did I get that right? Yeah. 9652 South Michigan. So folks, come on out. I've been involved from the outset, and it is definitely, as I said, it has the makings of one of the great movements of our time.
So we'll be back with the break, and we'll have Helen Mitchell, and please rejoin us.
The talk of Chicago is 1690 WVON Sherwin, Chicago.
The Museum of Science and Industry is getting students excited about science, providing hands-on science learning.
People are out on the floor doing little experiments.
Exposure to science career opportunities.
It's given me a lot of confidence in areas of science. I'm really interested in chemistry, and I'd like to be a chemist.
And support in going to college.
I actually received a full ride scholarship to IIT.
Our goal is to inspire and motivate the next generation of scientists and engineers.
When I grow up, I want to do something that I love.
Learn how MSI is transforming lives through science education.
If this radio spot were Nikki Baker's life, it would start pretty normal, like this.
But then right around here, her life would take a bad turn with her mother abusing her.
And about this far in, Nikki would drop out of high school and run away.
Here, she'd be forced to work two jobs struggling to support herself
and her daughter.
She'd feel stuck, 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 stuck.
But then she'd decide to earn her GED diploma.
She'd take my prep classes,
study every night,
and feel unstuck.
Because she'd finally hear someone say,
"Nikki Baker, come up and get your GED diploma."
If this radio spot were Nikki Baker's life, the ending wouldn't be the ending at all. It would be the beginning of a brighter future. For free info about GED test prep classes, call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org.
GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Non-custodial fathers, we know you may need help to become better fathers. Tune in to WVON every Sunday at 2 p.m. for the Fathers, Families, Healthy Communities Forum. Saquon Lawrence and myself, Dr. Kirk Harris, will discuss the New Man Project, which is a lifting up of what works when it comes to rebuilding the black family.
Reimagining the role and image of black men and fathers and working toward a successful campaign for black male achievement. Non-custodial fathers, become a member. Work with other fathers in a safe space who are committed to being in the lives of their children in positive ways. Explore what it truly means to be a man and effective ways of co-parenting with the mother of your children. Commit to engaging in demand-side job training and access to jobs. Work towards establishing a cooperative relationship with child support services. Work to establish visitation and other ethical and legal arrangements to spend quality time with your children.
Fathers, call us at 312-252-0460, extension 120. Visit our website at www.ffhc.org or listen to the show on WVON every Sunday at 2 p.m. WVON is now on iHeartRadio. If you have a smartphone or tablet, download the iHeartRadio app and enjoy WVON wherever you are. This program is brought to you by Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities.
The talk of Chicago is 1690 WVON Sherman, Chicago.
Welcome back.
We're back.
Today, we're glad to have a friend of FFHC, Fathers, Family, Health, and Communities, and the Responsible Fatherhood Field, Helen Mitchell, Director of Strategic Planning and Policy Development for Representative Danny K. Davis of the 7th District. So we're so glad that Helen, who's also very busy, like our previous guest, Susan Taylor, and Helen is calling in from D.C., and so, Kirk, tell our listeners a little bit more about Helen.
Well, first, let me just welcome my sister, Helen. Helen, how are you?
Outstanding, Brother Kirk.
Good. Well, let me just say we had Sister Susan Taylor on, and she gave you her greetings and props for the work that you're doing. And, of course, we know the kind of energy that you bring to this work, Helen. And, you know, you and I go back a little ways, of course. But let me, with that said, let me just give the listeners a little sense of who you are and why we love you so much and why we the passion that you bring to the work and how important that is. So we know that you're the Director of Strategic Planning and Policy Development for the Honorable Danny K. Davis, the 7th Congressional District, and you're the Senior Policy Advisor for the Committees on the Judiciary and Oversight in Government and Domestic Policy, Small Business and Budgetary and Appropriation Matters. You also manage the representative's most highest priorities, including criminal justice, reentry, employment, fatherhood, drug abuse, and prevention. And you played a vital role in managing and coordinating a group of 200 organizations in the passage and continued appropriations of the Second Chance Act, which is a big, big deal. You and I have had a number of conversations about it, and I know how significant this piece of legislation is. And you've also bridged a bipartisan support among members of the Committee on Ways and Means in the 12th Congress that resulted in an increase in the Department of Health and Human Services Responsible Fatherhood funding from an added $25 million, a 50% increase, which those of us who are doing work in responsible fatherhood are kissing your feet.
So. Just give praises to God. No kissing of the feet is necessary.
Yeah, Helen, that was Kirk talking.
Yeah,
there,
that's Kirk.
Right? Yeah, all right, then. All right. You know, I'm just
a little hyperbole doesn't hurt every once in a while. but you get the message, and we also know that you do that work around responsible fatherhood in healthy marriage with community stakeholders, and it's really important. Work. So first, Helen, first of all, you know, with that introduction, it's clear that you've played a strategic leadership role in some very important legislative initiatives. And those initiatives, you know, including the Julia Carson Responsible Fatherhood and Healthy Families Act, as well as the Second Chance Act, have some real significance for black men and fathers in particular. And I thought maybe we'd give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about those initiatives and why they are so important.
Well, before I begin, I'd like to give a shout out to Susan Taylor. She has and continue to be a matriarch. I've had the privilege of working with her with the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation Annual Leadership Conference, and she continues to play a pivotal role in raising the awareness and the needs of issues affecting our children. Mm-hmm. And foremost, I bring greetings on the behalf of the Honorable Danny K. Davis, who listens to your program regularly, and I'm sure he's listening right now. Hello, boss. How are you? And I hope to represent you well.
Hello, Congressman Davis.
Yeah. So as it relates to the Second Chance Act that was passed into public law with bipartisan support in 2008 and authorizes funding for the development and coordination of reentry services such as employment training, substance abuse treatment, and mentoring. The Julia Carson Responsible Fatherhood and Healthy Family Act of 2013, in which you're going to be dropping at the beginning of June, is a public policy that's being reintroduced by Representative Davis and Andre Carson of Indiana. And it calls for a national wealth building program with a social infrastructure to support the fatherhood and foremost the best interests of our children. The importance of these two programs are twofold. First of all, the Second Chance is at the back end of the prison pipeline, and it attempts to remove barriers to successful reintegration that's compromising the reunion of the family and ensuring safer communities. Mm-hmm. And second, the Julia Carson's fatherhood attempts to address the structural and cultural constraints that you know are contributing to and exacerbating barriers to employment and economic opportunity for lower income and returning fathers at the front end back then after their release from incarceration. Right. They work in tandemly, and this was calculated and strategic. Having had the privilege of leading the passage of the Second Chance Act initially when I started working for the member in 2007, I began to realize off the bat that Second Chance is like putting a bandage on an open wound.
Right.
As long as we continue to have these structural and cultural constraints that's compromising our ability and accessibility to quality education, and we know education attainment is synonymous with gainful, sustainable employment, we will continue to have this vicious cycle of disproportional rates of unemployment, joblessness, and social dislocation. So it's with that in mind that we want to come forth with a more comprehensive approach to addressing the instability in family relations and structure and the residential mobility that, again, is disproportionately affecting African Americans. Families and community.
Well, I think that's a thank you so much for sharing that. You're as articulate as always, but I wanted to also let the listeners know that Congressman Davis, and with your support, has been doing a considerable amount of work in support of fathers, and I think it. And he was doing this work way before it became popular and really, you know, something that was being mentioned by presidents. He was doing the work, and you were providing leadership for that work, and support for that work. And I just want to thank Congressman Davis for his national leadership and his engaged intellect for having you as a part of his team to make it happen.
Well, then also, not to cut you short, Kurt, you got to give kudos to the constituents of the 7th Congressional District.
Right, right.
The member has 30-plus task force and think tanks that, you know, embrace these issues and advocate and, more importantly, come forth for recommendations and solutions.
Fantastic.
Our legislation comes from the ground up, so we wouldn't be who we are or able to do what we're doing without our constituents.
Right.
And the member is equally embraced at the national level as well. So I would like to give a shout out to the constituents of the 7th Congressional District and, moreover, Illinois, period.
Yep. Yeah, well, and that's fantastic. I think that's great. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. So the other question that we have for you is around this, around jobs. Obviously, jobs are a very serious matter, and issues around workforce policy are critical to sustained outcomes, positive outcomes within the African-American community and communities generally. And there's been a lot of talk about this notion of transitional jobs and the roles that it can potentially play in supporting low-income fathers, low-income men in particular. Can you tell the audience a little bit about what's the big deal about transitional jobs and why you think this kind of legislative initiative, these legislative initiatives and supports are critical?
Sure. First off, let me begin by saying transitional job is not something with a statutory definition, but rather a program model that has a generic definition. The Department of Labor's Enhanced Transitional Job Grant Announcement, Section 1 of the funding, defines it as generally defined as a temporary paid work experience intended to improve participants' employability, earnings, and opportunities for advancements, and to promote self-sufficiency and long-term success in unsubsidized labor markets.
Mm-hmm.
And while transitional jobs have been, for the most part, successful to date in providing employment to people, they have been less successful in terms of producing long-term, meaning after-subsidized jobs,
right,
positive impacts on employment. in a period of high unemployment where the issue is not the skills and ability of potential employees, just given people work, can be viewed as a positive thing. Yeah. However, if the target population lacks more than just people willing to give them jobs, as in the case in today's global economy, then additional supports and services as far as education as well are critical, which is why Julia Carson's Responsible Fatherhood is critical, because it's a means to that end. It proposes to create two major workforce demonstration programs to be administered by the Department of Labor. The first is the Transitional Jobs Program that would combine subsidized employment with education and employment skills, and then lastly, a career pathway program that also combines work with education and employment skills training.
So you got to, the real thing is you got it. The transitional jobs are good because it creates the temporary opportunity to build the skills and connectivity to the labor market, but the other piece is really long-term sustainable employment, which is really the objective of that that strategy, thank you for sharing that. I think that provides some insight. Well, I got another question that I think is really important, because everybody's seeing what's going on in Congress. There seems to be a lot of contention. There's the budget issue, there's the sequester, there's the management of appropriations and expenditures, all of which has some significant implications for the African American community, and what should we be worried about? And more specifically and more importantly, what the heck should we be doing given what's transpiring these days in Congress? If you could give us a little insight on that, that would be really helpful.
Sure. Notwithstanding the current economic downturn and slow recovery and fiscal storms that we so often hear about every time we turn the TV on, low-income Black families and communities, for the most part, continue to be underserved and spatially isolated. They're blighted by joblessness, poor performance, school, drugs, and crime, where criminal justice system is readily accessible for many, and the lack of opportunities engenders a vicious cycle of intergenerational poverty and incarceration. The stories of the lives of Black children, families, and communities, in important respects, are accumulated policy stories, intentionally or not. Mm. Opportunity is created in significant respect by the interaction of policy and place. Mm-hmm. If we're truly going to address the crisis and put all Americans back to work and reduce poverty, we must create a mixture of a universal and targeted programs capable of weathering this political storm. So by definition, community stakeholders and advocates must proactively hold members of Congress accountable by monitoring and imposing legislation counter to ensuring the well-being of African-American children.
Right.
Moreover, they have to accept the fact that family interdependence matters, such that when one family member is affected by hardship, e.g. the father's joblessness, right, children and other family members are negatively affected.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the things, and, you know, you and I worked a little bit together, and one of the frustrations that we have in public policy is if these pieces are separate and disparate and they're not connected to one another. And I find that really the oddity of public policy that we often build in our country. So I appreciate you highlighting that. Saquon had a question for you that we'd like to get on the table, too.
So you
got that question, Saquon?
Yeah. How are you, Helen? It's good to be with you again. It's been a while.
All right.
So the question I had, and you and I talked a little bit about this before, and that is your commitment and the congressman's commitment to foster strategic partnerships at the community level to get work done, right? I know that's something that you want, that you try to facilitate, but it's still, from in some quarters, it's still a real challenge to get organizations to work strategically and collectively to achieve big things, right? And so can you just talk a little bit about what you like to see, what folks should be doing?
And that might be the part of the question, that the second part of my question is, what should we be doing,
which is a really important thing. Well, it's important to know the nature and the source of this fragmentation, and it all starts with public policy, as I stated before. But moreover, depending on the expectations of the grants or monies that are coming forth. If the priority isn't towards creating cooperative, collaborative alliances to ensure that there's a more comprehensive approach to addressing the holistic needs of the servicing population, then by definition, you got fragmentation. But it's just not at the federal level. You got to understand that the states have their priorities, and they're going to align and implement what federal dollars that they have accordingly, and then the local will do the same. The key is to be able to align yourselves based upon your area of specialization and, more importantly, hone in on the service in which you want to provide. Mm-hmm. You can't be everything to everybody, okay? So to that end, that creates opportunity in and of itself. But more importantly, to be able to understand the needs and the interconnectedness of the issues, then you yourself as service providers can search and undergo further search and discovery for partnerships in which you can align with. What's encouraging is that the Department of Justice has embarked upon that several years ago through this establishment of this interagency council. Of late, there hasn't been much activity, but it could be used as a roadmap to help understand that it doesn't make sense for the Department of Justice to do housing when you can go to HUD. It doesn't make sense for Justice to do jobs and training when you can go to the Department of Labor. So then what you do is reduce redundancy. You create a more efficiency of skills and operations, and then you create a more effective approach and making sure no one or no individual fall through the crack.
And, you know, and that's part of the FFHC model, too, which is to get partners, to get service providers to recognize what one another do well, and rather than replicating it, actually have that service partner deliver it in concert with the others with a common mission and objective in mind. So we appreciate that, and that works at all scales, right? It works at the community level. It works at the state level. It certainly needs to work at the federal level.
Exactly, and there are funding sources out there, and you just have to know where to search. Yes, there have been some cuts to the service and developmental block grants, but at the same time, those monies have been shifted to the U.S. Department of Treasury to community development financial institutions that are serving as, how can I say, bankers within distressed communities. In other words, they provide funding sources and funding backings for organizations or NPOs and NGOs that wouldn't be able to get funding through the traditional bank medium. So there are a ton of resources out there. And, you know, as with that in mind, I just like to plug the segue that everybody listening to this talk show should have U.S. House of Representatives identified as one of their favorites on their laptops, smartphones, and everything.
That's right.
Because it's within these key committees, Ways and Means, Judiciary, Ed and Labor, and Appropriations, that are decisions are being made that will directly and indirectly impact your community. And by the time it hits the floor, it's too late. It's a done deal, pretty much, because amendments are few and far in between.
You've provided us, as always, Helen, with amazing insight. Your energy, your commitment, and the work that you're doing with the Honorable Congressman Danny Davis and his leadership is greatly appreciated. We want to thank you for taking time out of your Sunday to be with us. You know you're my homegirl.
All right, brother, from another mother.
So you know how much I appreciate you, and thanks so much. And we have to get together either in D.C. or in Chicago, okay?
Consider it done.
All right.
All right. Take care, Helen.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So Congressman Davis has demonstrated his commitment to uplifting African-American fathers and a lot of the work he's been doing on the West Side. And on behalf of our members, we want to thank Congressman Davis, Helen Mitchell, and Susan Taylor for their commitment to our community. And by the way, when we refer to members, we're talking about our fathers who have joined Fathers Family Healthy Communities and signed a 10-point pledge to be better fathers. And so our members can avail themselves of 5 activities. It's very quickly, legal services to assist with visitation, paternity, and custody issues, as well as expungement of certain categories of criminal records. Child support services. FFFC has a strong and cooperative relationship with the Illinois Department of Child Support Services. The third thing is demand-side training and job placement services, and we're going to be talking about that on another show. Helen did just talk a little bit about transitional jobs and the need for them. for Fathers Only peer-to-peer sessions. Tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, our fathers come together in men-only, fathers-only sessions to talk about manhood and responsibility and accountability. And then last, subsidized father-child outings. So as we wind down, let's talk about some of the upcoming invited guests. Sean Dove, the director of the Campaign for Black Male Achievement at Open Society Foundations. Susan Taylor talked about how Open Society is funding her work, and they're also our funder. And let me also thank the Chicago Community Trust, who's also a primary funder here in Chicago. Also, we'll have Phil Jackson, executive director of Black Star. Joe Jones, executive director of the Center for Urban Families in Baltimore, and Kenny Braswell, executive director of National Clearinghouse for Responsible Fatherhood in D.C. Angela Kenyatta from ISIS Productions, who's doing a film on black fathers here in Chicago. Norris Stevens from the Illinois Department of Child Support Services, and that will be a call-in show. And Dr. Joe West and Dr. Angela Odom from Sinai Medical Systems or Health Systems and UIC will be talking about the health disparities between the black community and the larger society. So we are very excited to be on WVON, the voice of the nation, be part of a national discussion on the issues and challenges of our time. If you want to know more about Fathers, Family, Healthy Communities, if you want to join, if you're a non-custodial African-American father in Chicago, call us at 312-252-0460, extension 120. Again, 312-250-0460, extension 120. How much time we got, Kirk?
We got a couple minutes.
Any final remarks?
Well, I'd just like to say I thought this was a rich show. It really talked about the importance of adults getting involved in the mentoring. And Ms. Susan Taylor is just doing enormous work nationally, and we're so happy to have her in Chicago. I think the work that Helen is doing and that's happening nationally around fatherhoods and making sure that in our communities we're coordinating, leveraging, and sharing a common vision and mission about what fatherhood and strong families look like is important, and we remove those barriers and constraints to that at the community, national, and local level. That's an important way of moving forward. So I think that's my message for today, coordination and commitment.
Right. And I did want to give a shout out to Cliff Kelly and encourage people to listen to his show, because I think he's got something really interesting. I mean, he's going to be talking about the Chicago board meeting vote, and he's going to be talking about reaction to the red line shutdown and all of the weekend news. So check out Cliff Kelly. And again, the number for the National Cares Mentoring Movement meeting, or to get information regarding that meeting, tomorrow at Harlan High School at 6 o'clock, 773-599-3490. And so it was a great show. Thank you, Dr. Harris.
Well, thank you, my brother Saquon. You the man.
And so until next Sunday, take care.
Peace out.
The Talk of Chicago is 1690 WVON, Irwin, Chicago.